This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM. Backspin Golf is brought to you by Truly Nolan and Critter Control, French Lick Resort Casino, also sponsored by Commonwealth Credit Union and Georgetown Advantage Air. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome in Backspin Golf on this Sunday morning from the Square Country Club in Lexington. As always, just I'm so excited about the guest for today. Boy, Evan Schiller, for my money, the world's greatest golf photographer slash videographer. Is going to join me. And then all the way from Northern Ireland, Michael Gallagher, and we're going to talk about the Irish Junior Open Tour and Champion of Champions event that he is responsible for. And finally, my pal Jordan Perez, who covers amateur golf for No Laying Up. We're going to talk about the absolutely sensational U.S. Women's Amateur that just concluded. All of that coming up. So let's go. I always talk on Backspin Golf about how grateful I am to be able to meet people that I admire and respect. It doesn't happen often enough in our world today somehow. But on Backspin Golf, it happens to me a lot. And to say that I'm excited to talk with Evan Schiller now on Backspin Golf is a vast understatement. Before I say hello to him, what I need you to do, people, is go to evanschillerphotography.com. And that's S-C-H-I-L-L-E-R, evanschillerphotography.com. And just go through this amazing website and you'll get some idea of how anxious I am and excited I am to talk with him, because he is one of one. I'll just say that. And now I can say hello to him. Good morning, Evan.
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
Thank you for the wonderful introduction.
Oh, wait, you haven't heard anything yet, pal. I'm just telling you, you better be ready for it. I just want to give people an idea of why we're talking this morning. So the other day on your great Twitter account, you put up some photographs. And by the way, people, if you haven't had a chance yet, it's only been seconds to go to the website. Evan Schiller is, for my money, the world's greatest golf course photographer. And it can be arguable, but not to me. There is nobody better at this than Evan is. And I was looking, and you put some pictures up a few days ago of Baltusrol, which just finished the work, the Gil Hands work on this incredible 36 holes of golf there in New Jersey. And I thought, it triggered memories for me, Evan, of one of the great days I've ever had in my 40 years of playing was at Baltusrol. And I'll tell you about it later. But that's when I decided to get in touch with you. And I want to start here. I had no idea that you were a PGA professional, that you were playing, that you played in the U.S. Open. I had no idea about that. Could you take us, start at the beginning there? At a young age, you had a real talent for golf, I'm assuming.
Yes. Thanks to my father, who was a very avid golfer and introduced me to the game. He was never, a professional,
Yeah.
I mean, I think at best he was a 10 handicap. But he would, I remember him going out to play with his buddies on the weekends, and he would take me to the driving range. And he was the one who gave me my first golf lessons and introduced me to the game. And I remember we went on a couple of trips, and he'd take me along. And, you know, I started playing, you know, at a very pretty young age. I don't remember exactly how mm-hmm. young I was, but, you know, it was probably 5 or 6 or something like that. And he, yeah, so he's the one who introduced me, and it kind of went from there. And I, you know, eventually started playing, you know, some junior tournaments. I remember my mother driving me to some of these places because I could drive, and
yeah,
playing junior tournaments and amateur tournaments, and then, you know, eventually high school and college golf. You know, when I remember getting out of college and didn't really know what I wanted to do. And, you know, thanks again to my father, who encouraged me to pursue playing, you know, tournament professional golf. And, you know, along the way, you know, the reason I picked up a camera was probably because of my mother, who was a photographer. Not, you know, she was,
right.
She wasn't a professional.
Right.
She wasn't a professional, but she was very good. And they got me this little Instamatic camera. In fact, my father was an amateur filmmaker. My father was. So
yeah.
They were both kind of, you know, wired in that direction. And they got me a little Instamatic camera, and we would go on trips, whatever, you know, family trips, when I would just take pictures. And I guess that's where it all started. And eventually I started, when I was playing tournament golf, I started taking a camera with me and just, you know, taking pictures of my friends on the golf course or taking pictures of the golf courses I would play, you know, just for fun. And I would hang them up on my wall in my room. And, you know, one thing led to another. I played tournament golf for quite a while. And then I got a job as an assistant pro at Quake Ridge. Working for Rick for sure. And then I moved over to Westchester because of Tom Patry. Tom had gotten hired as the director of instruction there. And he asked me if I was, you know, interested in coming over there to work because they needed an assistant. And I did. Long story short, you know, I was taking pictures, and, you know, Tom said, you know, why don't we put some of these up in the pro shop or put them up during the Buick Classic, because they had the Buick Classic at Westchester.
Right.
And I, you know, I didn't think anybody would buy this stuff. You know, I laughed, right? And, you know, to my surprise, you know, we put a few up, people bought them. We got some more, and, you know, here we are, 20 something years later.
This is what I mean. This is the best. Okay, golf circle of life stuff. In reading on your great website about this, I see Westchester Country Club. I thought, I wonder if Evan knows Tom Patry. And then I find out that you guys traveled together, playing tournament golf, and that story about putting stuff up, working as the assistant pro at Westchester with him. And by the way, my initial friendship with Tom Patry was when I saw that he worked with Seve. And Seve was my idol from before I started playing golf. That's how our friendship started. And to this day, I love that man. I love him. But you go from hanging a few of those in the pro shop to now being over 600 golf courses, championship golf courses, all over the world. That's an astounding thing. I'm sure you think about that every once in a while, but it's astounding what you've done from your little Instamatic camera to now using drones and Do can you? Here's, I want to talk about the drone thing. How, when did you first realize how important drone photography and videography was going to be?
Well, it's a great question. Actually, I think it's up over 700 courses now.
But wow. Okay, update the website. Update the website.
I know exactly, right?
Okay.
I don't remember. I remember being out on a golf course a number of years back. This is before drone, you know, pre-drone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would use ladders or, you know, lifts like cherry pickers, you know, the stuff they use to inside of buildings or the wires. And, you know, lots of times when I'd shoot a golf course, they would call the tree guy, you know, the guy who would come with the lift, the bucket truck to trim the trees.
Yeah.
And he would come out and drive around with me and put me up in the little bucket truck, and I'd take photos, and, you know, I'd say, well, move me over here, move me over there. Where I would use ladders. And I remember several times, you know, being up in this bucket truck, you know, and looking over, you know, there was a pond or a lake. And I went, God, if I could just get over there to shoot, it would be a great angle. I said, boy, I literally said this several times. I wish I had a flying camera.
Oh.
I literally said that. And then one day I was going to do a shoot up in Michigan for Boeing Resorts. I've done a lot of work for them. And the guy who had hired me says, you know, there's a guy out of Detroit. Actually, his name is Kyle DeRose. And he flies drones. In fact, he builds his own drones. He has a drone company. I thought you guys should get together because maybe you could take your camera and put it on his drone.
Oh. You know?
And I had a pretty expensive, I was shooting with a Hasselblad then, which
expensive.
Is an expensive camera, you know? And I thought to myself, I said, there's no way. I mean, I'm not going to put this, you know, it was a lot of money up in the air with somebody I don't even know. Long story short, I speak to Kyle. We got this back and forth. He asked me for all the specs on my camera. He goes, I'll make a gimbal. Now, gimbal is the thing that holds the camera, keeps the camera level while the drone is flying, right?
Yep.
He built a gimbal to support my Hasselblad camera. And we went up to Michigan, northern Michigan, for several days shooting golf courses. And he would travel. He had this huge drone. He'd hook up my Hasselblad to it with a gimbal that he made. And that was my first introduction to shooting with a drone. And I said, this is it. This is a game changer. And that's where it started for me. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, DJI started coming out with drones. They weren't very good, but, you know, I started getting them and flying them and taking pictures. And yeah, that was, I don't know how long ago that was, but that was my first introduction.
And as you said, game changer, life changer in so many ways. It's incredible. That is, and people should know also on your website, I had no idea just because I'm an idiot. You have to be FAA licensed for this, right? To be able to use airspace, I guess.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
if you're going to do it professionally, yes, you have to get what they call the Part 107 license, where you actually have to go take a test. It's a written test, and they ask you all these questions about airspace. You don't have to take an aptitude test. You know, you don't have to actually, like, you know, when you learn to drive a car, you got to go take a driver's test.
Right.
But you do have to get it. If you're going to do it professionally, if you're not doing it professionally, you know,
just be careful.
Buy a drone.
Right.
Everybody's going to go fly a drone and, you know, go fly a drone, which I think is kind of interesting because, you know, if you're going to drive a car, a boat, fly a plane, You got to get a license. You got to pass the test.
Right.
Not with a drone.
Yeah, everyone should, because they can be dangerous, as we know.
Yeah.
Here's something else that I've been thinking about. A golf course says to you, we want you to come and photograph our course. You'll go to the course and you'll go, obviously, walk the entire course and find where you'd like to shoot. And then you have to figure out what time of day and the lighting. And it's what makes your photographs so incredible, all of them. How long does it take from that point until you're actually doing the photography?
It's a good question. Well, I always get to the golf course and try to allow myself ample time to scout. I'll walk, drive around the whole golf course just to get a sense of the layout, learn my way around. But also walk, drive around with this little app called the Sunseeker. And the Sunseeker will tell me, I hold it up in the sky, and it will tell me where the sun is at, every hour of the day, So I can tell. And I mean, there's plenty of photographers, actually people who use it. But it'll tell me, okay, when the sun is going to come above the trees on the horizon. So, it tells me when it'll tell me when sunrise and sunset, but I can hold this thing up in the air and it'll tell me, where the sun is going to rise. It's going to come up over that tree over there at 6:30 a.m. So I know that. So, and then when I scout on each hole, I'll hold this thing up at various points in the hole so I can see, where the sun is going to be at certain times on various holes, on the green, on the tee, and sometimes I have to ask the superintendent to move a pin or cut a pin in a certain place so that it's in the sun at the time I want to shoot. So it could take me, a couple hours to go scout a course properly. And, and I write down, I have a scorecard on the cart lots of times, and I write all my notes, about what time I want to shoot what holes.
Right.
And,
right.
If I want to, where I would like the pin, because I write all this down, because then I have to communicate with the superintendent, because I have to coordinate with them in the morning, because they're out there, getting the course ready for the day's play.
Right.
But oftentimes they'll go out early and mow mm-hmm. grass for me. They'll, can't do all the holes, but they'll do a handful.
Right.
So the scouting is driving around, walking around, playing, and then speaking and coordinating with the superintendent. So it could take me, a couple hours. And then I'm always learning as I go. I see different angles, or maybe I got this one wrong. I need to go shoot it tomorrow, and I got here a little bit late.
Right. Yeah.
Later than I wanted to, because the sun wasn't exactly how I thought it, I wanted it to be. So.
Right.
There's a lot of coordination and prep work.
Right. That's what I was getting at. All right. We have a couple minutes left. I'm going to have to talk to you again, because there's so much I want to talk to you about. But when I'm looking through the courses that you have photographed, and a lot of them are, I always say this, I was an actor for a long time, and I was very blessed to be able to play in a lot of tournaments at great golf courses. And I have favorites from all over the world. But do you have, it's impossible, a couple of your favorites? In other words, I saw Ballybunion, which is maybe my favorite course anywhere. Bandon Dunes, where we just watched the U.S. Women's Amateur. That was unreal, that golf course. Do you have a couple of favorites where you would go, those are a couple of my favorites?
Yes. Yeah, I have a handful.
Yeah.
Royal County down in Ireland. Fisher's Island. Love Pacific Dunes.
Yeah.
The Pacific Dunes is great. There's a golf course in the Dominican Republic, Punta Espada. I really love that place.
Wow.
You know, may not be on everybody's, you know, top, but I really like it. But those are the ones, you know, I mean,
yeah.
Cypress Point is amazing.
Yep.
Just, you know, kind of a handful of the ones that I think are, you know, top of my Royal Dornick.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's so hard. Yeah. I mean, these places you photographed are the best golf courses in the world. That you do all of them justice is the great thing. Because as I said, to start with this, there is nobody better in the world at doing what you do than you, my new friend. And I'll be in touch with you real soon, because I have a lot of other questions I want to talk to you about. But thanks so much for taking some time this morning. And I'll talk to you real soon.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed being on. I appreciate it.
Okay. Take care, Evan.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is brought to you by Truly Nolan and Critter Control.
Welcome back. Welcome back. People that listen to Backspin Golf know that when I am this excited, there's somebody very special that I'm about to talk to. All my guests are special. But anytime I get to do a Zoom call with someone, a dear friend who is in Northern Ireland, for God's sake, I am very excited. And that is the case right now, because I'm going to speak with my buddy. Well, formerly he's known as Michael Gallagher, but to those of us that know him and love him, he's Mickey G, PGA. Hello there, Mickey G.
Hi, Matthew. Good to see you again. You're looking well in your golfing attire.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. You know, if you can't play well, you got to look good. You know that. I'm not saying that to you. You look good and you play good. But for me, you know how it is. It's so great to not only talk to you, but to see you again. And my first question, we're going to talk about golf and what's going on with you, but how are Denise and the kids? That's really what I care about.
Denise and the kids are doing great. So I have three kids, as you know, Georgia, who's 9, Sienna, 3, and Reese, who's 2.
Yeah.
Georgia's into the Irish dancing. She's amazing at that. She recently danced at one of my big events. Reese and Sienna, they're finding their feet with the golf clubs. Reese is looking for his wee plastic golf club every day. So
nice.
Definitely PGA Tour bound, I think, in the next 20 years.
Nice. All right. I'm just saying this. It's time for another video from you guys to me. I'm just saying.
Yeah, okay. We'll get that one planned.
Okay, good. All right. Now, I always talk about you when we get to speak, and it's not hyperbole. You run the greatest junior golf tour in the world. You also run the Champion of Champions. I always get speechless talking to you about what you do. And I know right now, I want you to tell our listeners where we are in the Flogus Irish Junior Open Tour season, because I know that's going on. And then I want to talk to you about Champion of Champions. So let's start with the Flogus Irish Junior Open Tour.
So we're basically coming towards the end of our summer tour, where the overall champion gets the Gary Player Trophy, as I'm sure some of your listeners would have heard in the past. So basically, it's like a point system that runs throughout the summer events. And the one who accumulates the most points throughout the events lifts the Gary Player Trophy. So Gary, you know, Gary's a great admirer and a great ambassador for the tour. He does a lot for us over the years. And it's just, you know, it's amazing. Keep sort of, anytime I say that there, I keep having to pinch myself because, you know, to have a living legend like Gary endorse the events and put his name to one of our trophies is special. So we're coming towards the end of it. We've an event next week at Ashburn Golf Club in Dublin. And then our final event is at Ardglass Golf Club, close to the Royal County Down. It's one of the top links courses in Ireland. So it's on in a couple of weeks. And our sponsor for that is giving away, I'll give it in dollars so that your American listeners will know, it's £6,000, but it's probably about $9,000 of prizes. So the prizes are, like, I follow junior golf tours all around the world, and I can safely say this is hands down the best prizes in junior golf. The prizes are incredible.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at in terms of that. But there's also events that have started in last year. So you may have seen it online. There's the Wiger Tour, which is the World Amateur Golf Rankings.
Right.
So that's basically events to give players an opportunity in Ireland, elite golfers, an opportunity in Ireland to get on the Wiger rankings and to climb the rankings. One of the players that won an event at the start of the year, Gavin Tiernan, he went on to be beaten in the final of the Amateur Championship by Ethan Fang. So, you know, you're getting players like of the caliber of Gavin and stuff playing in the events. And it's just giving more opportunities to the elite golfers in Ireland are from all around the world. We've had players play from all over the world in it. So, you know, it's as with all our events, they're open to, in the name of the title, Irish Junior Open. So it's open to all players, boys and girls from across the world. So that's basically where we're at the moment. We're closing in on the Gary Player Trophy, and we are sort of closing towards the end of the Elite Wiger Tour as well.
Okay. See, that the way you talk about it, and it's very kind of almost matter of fact, although I know how proud you are of this. But I will say this again. This is the World Amateur Golf Rankings. The World Amateur Golf Rankings. Here in the States and all over, we're watching, we just saw the USGA, the Junior Amateur. We have the US Men's Amateur going on now. We had the women, the girls junior and the women's amateur. These ranking points are huge. And to know that you have a big hand in helping golfers get these ranking points is just, it's amazing to me. Before we get to Champion of Champions, when I go to your incredible Twitter accounts and websites, and it's at Irish Junior Open on Twitter, right? You'll have to do the champions ones because I always forget. But it says it's open to golfers up to the age of 25. And then your great social media posts, which you do all the time. I don't know how you do that either. This is the runner-up and the winner for the under 9 category and the under 14 category. And I'm looking at these kids and thinking how incredible that they get a chance to do this. It's just amazing. I wish I had a chance to do it when I was young, but we didn't even have golf when I was young because I'm, you know, 1500s I'm talking about. But anyway, it's just amazing.
Yeah, no, it's obviously, as I was alluded to before, but I grew up playing junior golf and there was nothing for young players to play in. Yes. So I had a love for teaching junior golf and I wanted to give the younger generation an opportunity. So 11 years ago, I started doing that there. And in the first event, there was over 300 players in it. And it's just obviously grown since then. Now, as with anything successful in life, there's always people that will try to imitate you. But to be honest with you, I take that as a compliment. And I just, I'm always innovative. I'm always thinking outside the box and trying to move on. And the way I see it is, you know, because people, you know, basically try to do what you're doing and copy your events, you know, the way I see it is they're also given opportunity for the kids And therefore, you know, it'll get more kids involved in the game, and ultimately it'll be a win-win for everybody. So, look, I don't take it to heart. I always know I'm one step ahead of everybody because I'm always thinking of the next thing, you know, to keep kids excited and give them more opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, as I said, last year the Wigger Tour started up and has proved a success purely because in America there's lots of Wigger events, high-ranking Wigger events. In Ireland, there's pretty much very little. So again, it's just to give everybody an opportunity. And next year, I'm already planning a few exciting things for the Flow Gas Irish Junior Open Tour. Just as I say, to keep things fresh, give people opportunities, and so there's plenty of things happening down the line. So stay tuned is the word on the street.
All right, and I will just say this: I don't care what anybody else is doing. It will never be in their wildest dreams as good or successful as what you have done ever.
Thanks.
All right. In 1 minute, champion of champions, where are we with that? That's astounding, that tour.
So basically that event took place about 3 weeks ago at the Five Star Loch Earn Resort. So there was actually 254 competitors from over 40 countries took part in it. That's it capped at that number purely because, it's difficult to get 254 golfers out in the one day. That was a timesheet going from 6:30 in the morning to 6:30 in the evening. 12-hour timesheet. So as you can imagine, it was a busy day. And so basically it's just now getting the qualifying tours lined up for next year and getting all the qualifying events. So that's basically where it's at with that. Another year ahead of planning.
Okay. So we got the Flogus Irish Junior Open Tour kind of wrapping up for the summer tour. Will you get 3 days off at some point so you can do something, or do you just keep going?
So I'm actually going to Coldplay at Wembley Stadium in London at the end of August. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I have a few other wee trips planned. Between now and Christmas. So looking forward to winding down a bit after a busy year.
Right. All right. Well, give Denise and the kids a big hug from me, and I'll be expecting a video sometime soon when you get a minute. And it makes not only my day, the foreseeable future, when I get to see you and talk to you. And, you know, I love you, Mickey G.
Good man. Thank you, Matthew. Love you too.
Okay.
You're one of a kind.
Yeah, thank goodness. See ya.
Thanks very much, guys.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is brought to you by French Lick Resort Casino.
Welcome back to Backspin Golf. It seems like, and I'm extremely happy about this, that Jordan Perez has become my co-host on Backspin Golf. And I would be happy with that every week. It is amateur golf time. We got all kinds of stuff going on in the world of amateur golf. Junior golf, we've talked about that a couple weeks ago, actually. But this week, there is a tournament that just concluded that I was fully invested in from the beginning till the last shot of, and that was the U.S. Women's Amateur. And so I need to talk, and I'm excited to talk to Jordan Perez of No Laying Up, who covers amateur golf for that great media platform. Hello, Jordan Perez.
Hello, so happy to be back. It is right, arguably the best time of year. I know. I don't know how many people would agree with me on that, but the fun in the amateur golf world.
Well, I've said on this show, and I said it to you last time, I don't watch a lot of PGA Tour golf anymore. I watch LPGA golf and amateur golf and the DP World Tour because I love the commentary. But so this, for you, I know how big it is for you, but for me as well. We have the men's amateur going on now. We'll talk about that some other time. But I want to start with, for people listening who don't know about Bandon Dunes and where this U.S. Women's Amateur was held in Oregon. Can you talk a little about the golf course?
Oh gosh, Bandon Dunes is just a tremendous location. It was so exciting to see a U.S. Women's Amateur at Bandon Dunes on the calendar, and there's a bunch more USGA championships coming there in the coming years, which will be fabulous. But no, just a real true test of golf. Lots of wind, lots of lower trajectory shots, really interesting greens, and a real challenge all the way through. It was interesting because I heard a lot of dialogue, and I mean, going in being like, it's very much a second shot golf course. But as we saw this week or this past week on the U.S. Women's Amateur, it felt like from the tee box, the women were tested all the way through. And I was thinking back because I know we talked a little bit about the U.S. Women's Amateur, how this was just such a good one in particular. And it's like, you know, I can't think of as much of a test as they've had in the past few years for this event, you know, and it's interesting because I always think of the U.S. Women's Amateur, and I think of, you know, a venue that has to be perfect for match play, right? That's always like my big ask. It's please just be a venue that is perfect for match play. But it was really perfect for both a stroke play and match play format. Honestly, I mean, I would love to see, I would love to see Bandon used in that way more often, especially on the women's amateur side, because I think it fit their games tremendously. Yeah. But yeah, just a fantastic venue. I mean, we were so lucky to see some of the most like breathtaking shots or no, breathtaking views in golf in last week. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. It was interesting. They were going back and forth between Memphis, the FedEx St. Jude, and Bandon. I'm like, yeah, turn that off. This is news that we deserve.
Earlier in the show, I spoke with Evan Schiller, who is, for my money, the best golf photographer and videographer in the world. He is the official photographer for Bandon Dunes, one of his golf courses. And his shots of that place, people listening, if you want to know and you didn't see the Women's Amateur, go to Evan Schiller Photography and look at what Jordan and I are talking about, because it is magnificent. Here, I want quickly explain to people listening how the Women's Amateur works. In other words, stroke play and then match play. How many are there original entrants in the Women's Amateur?
Oh, goodness. I believe it's 312. Yeah. I always get the number mixed up.
I think it is 312. Yeah.
Yes. And so I don't know. And I didn't get bit in it. Anyway, so 12, that always a brain busting question. I don't know why that it's such a simple answer. 312. We go from a 312 stroke play event, play two rounds of stroke play, cut the field down to the top 64.
Right.
So sometimes that means a pretty massive playoff. To get in, which we did see this year. It's very, obviously very cutthroat to get into match play, but you've got a round of 64, similar to the March Madness format you're familiar with, that goes all the way down to two players in match play. And you're basically playing until somebody wins. There is no, you don't end at 18 holes, you will keep going. And we saw a lot of that this week, which I think was part of the magic of the U.S. Women's Am. Not a lot of matches were ending early. And I think that goes back to the test that Bandon really was and how the USGA set it up.
Now, oh boy. But they play, and the men do too, but they play so much golf in a few days, getting through stroke play, then match play, and you have matches in the morning and the afternoon sometimes. The final is 36 holes. I mean, thinking about it I pulled a hamstring just thinking about it. And Bandon, by the way, is not an easy course to walk in the first place. Now, when I was texting with you before we spoke, you just got off the phone with Megha Ghane, who won the U.S. Women's Am. She is what a spectacular young lady and golfer she is. Can you talk to people about a little bit about Megha Gane?
Yeah, I could give you a lot of bit about Megha Gane. She's just been one of the premier figures in women's amateur golf. She's fantastic. And it's interesting because she burst out on the scene early. She was a very known name in AJGA and the golf space, playing drive chip and putts and big time right. Premier events. But she really made a name for herself when she played the US Women's Open at Olympic in 2021 and was in that final group that Sunday and ended up with low amateur honors. But that was kind of the characterization of Megha Gane for a long time. That was like that US Women's Open, that US Women's Open, back to Olympic, back to Olympic. And if you're not that invested in the women's amateur scene, you know, I think a lot of people had this perception that Megha Gane had kind of disappeared, and that just couldn't be the furthest thing from the truth.
Right.
She's had a very successful career at Stanford. She's become a leader of that team. She doesn't like to call herself that, but she truly is among such a, you know, a developing pantheon of incredible golfers. But she's won college events. She's played in some of the biggest events. She's played in Anwell practically every year. I mean, she was the first round leader coming out of this year's for opening round at Champions Retreat, which is a tough, tough course.
Yeah.
Had some injury issues last year and struggled a little bit. She also had to withdraw out of the women's amateur last year, which you know, might have played a role in some of that motivation to have such a good week out in Bandon. She talked a lot of gratitude and how, you know, like her amateur career was kind of coming to a close. And I think, you know, Megha preaches a lot of balance and a lot of, you know, having a life outside of golf. And golf is obviously so extremely important to her. She's very devoted to her golf. But at Stanford, as we all know, that's a very academically rigorous school. And so she's not let her foot off the pedal on that whatsoever. And just coloring her life outside of it. I think that's a lot of that last summer when she was dealing with some injury really led to her having a lot of success last fall on the college scene, and inevitably in the spring, taking Stanford to that title match. And even though they ended up losing, she still had an incredibly successful run. And for a while, she was known as a match play stalwart, but in a team setting. So at the Curtis Cup, went 3-0, I believe, in her matches.
Yeah.
And at NCAA, she's won a national championship with Stanford, took them to that title match again this year. And now, you know, she's won it for herself. And that it's just incredible. And now she's been able to channel that into a prize just for Megha Gane. And so the real story here is Megha Gane never disappeared. I mean, Megha Gane has always been an incredible golfer.
Right. Well, that was kind of a joke, people that thought that. And she's going back to Stanford for her senior year.
Correct.
It's too bad they don't have any good golfers coming out of there, like that team, Rose Zhang. And I mean, you know, there are a few players that have been there. All right. Hopefully, since you're now my co-host, we will talk again real soon, and maybe we'll talk about the men's amateur, but there's a lot going on with the LPGA, too, that I want to catch up with you on. So I'm just always, you know, I say it every time, very grateful to you and very blessed to me to be able to speak with you. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I love being your new co-host. I'll be back.
Okay. Thank you. Well, another edition of Backspin Golf has come and gone. I'm so lucky. I say it all the time. I am so lucky to be able to speak with the people I speak with. And I'm grateful to our partners, Commonwealth Credit Union, Georgetown Advantage Air, French Lick Resort, where I will be in the next couple days. I'll talk about that next week. And Truly Nolan Critter Control. Have a great rest of your week. We'll be back next Sunday on ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is brought to you by Commonwealth Credit Union,